originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy you are listening with us here this evening. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired top trainer, you know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are coming to you, of course, on Sirius 219, XM 206, and worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. You can tune into the live streaming anytime that we are on the air, and you can listen to podcasts of this show and all of our programs, horseracingradio.net. JT, good evening, my friend.
Good evening. Happy and delighted to be here.
It's Derby week.
Yeah, well, it's Derby week, but we're going to be talking to Graham Motion. That's better than Derby week.
Well, and that ties into Derby week, by the way.
Well,
once again.
Once again.
Here we go.
He won the Kentucky Derby, you know.
Yes, he did.
Just checking.
A little horse by the name of Animal Kingdom. We remember that one very, very well. And he's hoping that lightning will strike twice on the first Saturday in May again this year. Graham Motion first joined us on this program October 24th of 2012. Now, he's been on for several interviews in the months and years since that time. But it was when we were first starting Trainer Talk. That was the first year that we launched this particular show. Graham came on for a half hour. He talked about his life and his background and going to the school of Jonathan Shepherd. And he also mentioned that he grew up wanting to be a jockey, but quickly realized that that wasn't going to happen because he was rapidly getting too big. Well, his career choice has worked out pretty darn well, and we are absolutely thrilled to have Graham Motion join us on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton here tonight. Graham, welcome, my friend.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, looking forward to, well, talking about some of the unbelievable moments that you've had in your career and some of the top horses. You know, I was looking at some statistics, and since you appeared on this show in 2012, you saddled nearly 500 additional winners. So things continue to go well for Graham Motion.
That's a good stat. I like that.
He was hoping I didn't say 50. Well, look, you're currently on the doorstep of what would be a second victory in the Run for the Roses with a very talented three-year-old Irish War Cry. Let's start by talking about him for a few minutes. Tell me the story of Irish War Cry and how he's gotten to be so good and gotten to this point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, I can't honestly say that I could have predicted this before we ran him the first time at Laurel. You know, I think we liked him. I think the guys in the two-year-old barn will say they perhaps were more aware of his ability than perhaps I had given him credit for. I think they liked him quite a bit. You know, he drew in the morning of that maiden race, and I think that was part of the reason why he was a good price, was because he was, you know, stacked outside because he drew in at the last moment. And I thought he ran a really impressive race that day. I mean, it really caught my attention. I'm not sure I've had a two-year-old win quite as impressively as he did, although, you know, you never know what they beat in their first start. But obviously the number, the speed number came back very well, very good. So I kind of had in mind right after that race, after seeing how well he did it, to point for the Marylander, the 7-furlong race that on the last day of the year at Laurel. I thought it was a perfect fit. I thought a progression to 7 furlongs was a really good fit. And I thought that would help us to decide where to go for the winter. I thought people were a little hard on him that he only just won that day. I thought he ran a really tough race. He got very aggressive. Fogel kind of smooched him away from the gate, and he got on the bit. And I think Fogel probably blamed himself a little bit for that. So he was, you know, up on the lead, but ran a very game race to hold on, I thought. at a very short price. So I think people maybe expected him to win a little easier than he did. But I was very happy with it. Obviously, off of that race, we took him to Florida. And the rest is history, as they say.
What's that like when people are second-guessing your horse? You think you've got a nice horse and people are knocking him. What is that? How does that affect you?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to get too caught up in it. I mean, obviously for us, it's, you know, I hear people say it all the time, the horses are like our children, so we tend to take it a little personally. Just like at my 14-year-old soccer game, I might take things personally if somebody says something. But I just thought it was a little harsh that people, you know, criticize a horse that was able to put two wins, you know. He was now 2-for-2 at this point, which is not easy for any horse to do. So I was really pleased with it. I didn't pay too much attention to it, to be honest.
When you got him to Florida, he went on and won extremely impressively in the Holy Bull Stakes. That was on February 4th. And then came back with that really dull effort in the Fountain of Youth, where he finished 7th. And again, people were starting to second-guess this horse at that point. It was his first career loss. Did you ever come up with an explanation for that performance, Graham?
No, I really didn't. And just to back it up, so when I took him to Florida, I originally had planned to run him at Tampa in the Sam Davis. I thought that would be, you know, the easier of the two spots rather than Holy Bull. Once I knew that Ian was going to run his horse at Tampa, and I'd kind of heard the antics a little bit of Mark Cassie's horse at Palm Meadows, I just decided, you know, why was I going to go run at Tampa when, you know, I could run here in the Holy Bull and kind of stay close to home. So that's kind of how we ended up there. And I was, you know, astonished at how well he handled the two-year-old champion that day. I mean, he did it really impressively. So I think he caught everybody's attention that day. The Fountain of Youth was a complete mystery to me. I did have some soul-searching kind of leading up to it, wondering if I was doing the right thing by running him back. I knew he'd run a huge number in the Holy Bull, and I was going to be told by the handicappers that he would probably bounce. But just seeing the horse every day, he was doing so well, I couldn't justify waiting 2 months to run him back in the Florida Derby. It just didn't make sense to me. So, you know, coming off the Fountain of Youth, certainly it was a real head-scratcher. I mean, even if he bounced a little bit, that was a disastrous race. I mean, it was really an aberration. I put it down to a really drying-out, kind of cuppy racetrack that I think he didn't handle, and I think he probably laid too close to a pretty honest pace that day on top of the bounce.
It was a strange performance. The racetrack was a little funky that day. But back to our previous conversation, talk about training tips dispensed to a guy that has already won the Kentucky Derby that people on social media were telling you should do this and that and the other thing. I was laughing, but I was also appalled that they would even go there. Talk about that experience a little bit.
Yeah, I think I was sort of more amused by it than upset by it. You know, look, I think in this game and any sports, you get a lot of opinions, and certainly it doesn't matter how long you've been around or how many big races you've won, you're still open to criticism and perhaps suggestions. But I think it more amused me than anything.
Graham, when you have a horse that has so much talent and then inexplicably throws in a performance like Irish War Cry did in the Fountain of Youth and you don't really have an explanation for it, is there ever a time in a trainer's career when maybe you start to second guess yourself a little bit after something like that?
I think we do it all the time. I mean, I think I constantly second guess myself, and I think that's what makes it so important to have a really good team behind you and also train for good owners that have confidence in you that aren't also second guessing you. I think as a trainer, you get second guessed enough, whether it's by yourself or by other people, that, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are. I think you need the support of a good crew. And it's easy, you know, to get to questioning yourself and wondering if you should do things differently. And I've always been a big believer, and that's one of the one of the hardest things to do and one of the most important things to do is just don't change anything. You know, when things aren't going well or things don't go well in any particular race, don't panic. You know, just ride it out. If you've been successful, stick with what you've been doing. You haven't suddenly forgotten how to train overnight.
With that said, talk about the 4 weeks from the Fountain of Youth Stakes to the Wood Memorial. Did you pretty much just stick to the game plan?
Very much so. I mean, look, again, something else that I try to do as a trainer is act on common sense. I try not to get too complicated. I always remember a quote from Bill Mott in an article I read when I very first started training. And, you know, in the quote, he just said, you know, keep it simple, use your common sense. And I think that's what I try to do. It's my philosophy. The Wood Memorial to me seemed like it should be one of the easier preps. It also allowed him 5 weeks. I was very nervous about bringing him back in 4 weeks again off of such a bad effort. And it also allowed me the opportunity to get him back to Fair Hill and run out of my run out of his own environment at Fair Hill, which is something I was anxious to do. So it just seemed like a very logical fit to point him for the Wood.
Yeah, 5 weeks from the Fountain of Youth to the Wood Memorial. And then now looking ahead to the Kentucky Derby, first of all, your thoughts on the Wood and that performance that we saw by Irish War Cry?
You know, I think it was everything I'd hoped it would be. I think it was everything I thought it probably should be if he ran back to his previous races, you know. I don't think it was a surprise because the Fountain of Youth was a surprise. This was the old Irish War Cry that I knew, and that's, you know, kind of how Rajiv and I talked about it. And, you know, perhaps the only thing that surprised me maybe was that Rajiv kind of moved fairly early when they turned down the backside, and I just, you know, my heart skipped a beat for a minute thinking, boy, you know, he's going pretty early to take on the leaders. But, you know, Rajiv had a lot of confidence in him and obviously felt like he had a lot of horse.
Was there any trepidation going into the race? Like, what happens if he doesn't run good?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, I didn't know which horse was going to show up. I mean, I'd seen him train very well at the Fountain of Youth, so I think that anyone asked me, I would say, you know, I can't tell you how he's going to run, and I think because of that, it was a very, it was that was, you know, maybe as an emotional, and maybe I was as wound up about as I've been for a long time, because there was a lot riding on that race.
Talking with trainer Graham Motion here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Graham, you mentioned jockey Rajiv Miraj, who will once again be aboard Irish War Cry in the Run for the Roses. This is a relationship that goes back several years, you and Rajiv. Tell me a little bit about the relationship and tell me about putting him on Irish War Cry the way you did.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Rajiv had ridden for me a little bit, but it wasn't probably until he rode Main Sequence that we really, you know, became pretty good friends, and I just had such admiration for the way he handled Main Sequence. And I honestly kind of give him credit for being the one that figured him out and really put that horse on the right track. I mean, when he won the United Nations, we discussed waiting as long as he could on Main Sequence. And, you know, Rajiv really took me literally, and he really waited until they turned for home, I think, to make his move. And I think that became such an important deal with Main Sequence, not getting to the front too early. You know, and obviously he went on a flurry of winning most of the grade ones that year up to the Breeders' Cup, when, of course, Rajiv couldn't ride him because of that terrible spill he had. Ironically, in the race after he rode Main Sequence, in order to get him to the Breeders' Cup. So that was a real roller coaster for him and us, obviously.
Yeah, and the rehab that Rajiv went through was extremely extensive. He pretty much went through hell, for lack of a better term, trying to get back to the races. And now here he is with an opportunity to compete in the world's most famous horse race. When he went down in that spill July 10th, 2015, Graham, you immediately showed your support on social media. Talk about the relationship you have with Rajiv away from horse racing, more the personal side of it.
Yeah, so this was coming on the heels of the injury, you know, that he missed the Breeders' Cup with a broken arm. So this was now his second spill in a very short space of time. And they were both very bad spills. And I, you know, obviously I had a lot of empathy towards him. I felt you know, I thought it was a real tough blow for him. He was doing as well as he did, like I would for any jockey, really. But because of the friendship we had and the fact that he'd been riding this very good horse to me, perhaps I felt a little more involved and, you know, really tried to stay in touch with him as best I could and try to keep his spirits up. I mean, he's, as you know, he's a Jamaican and he's got that Jamaican thing going on, so he's always pretty upbeat. But I just like to keep in touch with him and try to visit him when we had the opportunity to.
Yeah, I think that meant a lot to him. He was in some pretty dark places along the way. It was a rough go, and I know that he mentioned a couple of times to us during that winter that you had talked to him and made him feel a lot better. I think that was a great move on your part.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I think it's anything that anybody would do for a friend, and it's, you know, I don't think people quite realize what a downer that can be for a jockey to be suffering through that. Not to mention, you know, he was just in such extreme pain. I think that was the biggest thing in the articles I've read, you know, about this. Rajiv always mentions the pain he was in, and I'd kind of forgotten how that was. I mean, that was always something that he brought up to me when I was talking to him, was just this extreme pain that he was in. And I remember going out to dinner with him for the first time. I want to say it was January or February in Florida. My family met up with him and Angie, and you know, that was his kind of first public outing, and that was a real big step for him. And I never, to be honest, would have imagined he would have been back riding that fall. I really would have questioned it if you'd asked me that night.
Yeah, quite remarkable. Considering that relationship, Graham, what would it mean to be able to give Rajiv a leg up on the Kentucky Derby winner?
Yeah, I try not to get caught up in that too much. I mean, obviously it would mean a great deal to both of us, but you know, this game can really be a heartbreaker. It doesn't really, you know, it's not often you have fairy tales come true in this sport. So, look, it would mean a tremendous amount to both of us professionally and personally. And I think it's always more fun to do it with somebody that you have so much respect for and admiration and a friendship with. It was a tremendous situation with Johnny, who's also, you know, his family are pretty good friends with us. When he wrote Animal Kingdom, our kids went to school together. So when you have that personal relationship, obviously it adds a special side to it.
Yeah, it would be a special moment if indeed Irish War Cry could pull it off beneath those twin spires. Graham, you are now one of a very select and privileged fraternity of trainers to know the feeling of saddling a Kentucky Derby winner, of course, Animal Kingdom in 2011. For those of us who will absolutely never know that feeling, and I can guarantee you I will never know that feeling, put into words what that moment is like when your horse crosses the finish line in front.
Yeah, extraordinary. I mean, you know, Animal Kingdom was 20-1. Obviously, we felt like we had a chance. I remember at the top of the stretch, you know, I'd run in the Derby a couple of times before, and, you know, around about the 3/8 pole, I always feel like it sorts out the men from the boys a little bit. And my horses in previous years, when they got to the 3/8 pole, I knew I was in trouble. Well, this time, you know, around about the 3/8 pole, I thought Animal Kingdom was really going well, and I thought, you know, this is looking pretty good. And then the next thing I remember is sort of around about the 8th pole, it looked like he was a winner, and I thought this would be the cruelest thing if he got beat right now. I'll never forget having that sentiment, you know. And then I just remember probably the first person coming up to me is once they crossed the wire and saying, "You won the Derby." You know, that's a pretty amazing feeling.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe it. You're taken from the 3/8 pole and having that experience before, it gives you that confidence to you know, think you have a shot. I mean, most people never ever even get a chance to run in the Derby, and you have that background that allows you the ability to enjoy the victory, and that's really cool.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, the next thing was trying to get down to the winner's circle, which is just chaos, because first of all, you know, I'm not that familiar with Churchill anyway, so it's so crowded, you know, you really don't know where you're going, your legs are pretty numb anyway from what you just experienced. I remember finding Dale Romans, who Actually, I think I just hung on to his jacket. He just said, follow me. So that's how I got down to the winner's circle. And I remember distinctively seeing Chip, who had won the Derby with Mind That Bird, giving me a high five just before I headed out onto the track.
Now that you've been there, Graham, and you've gotten to the top of that mountain, does it make you maybe even want it a little bit more now that you've gotten a taste of what that feels like?
I don't know. I mean, I feel fairly comfortable in the fact that I've won it. It's almost the opposite for me. I feel like I've been extremely fortunate to have won the race. I obviously want to get back because certainly you, when you have that taste for it, you obviously want to get back, like any big race, whether it's the Derby or the Breeders' Cup or the Dubai World Cup. But at the same time, I think I feel a little bit more relaxed about it. I feel like it's not, I'm not so driven that I have to be there. I think more the sensation I have is I kind of have to pinch myself that I'm in this position. You know, why me? Why am I so lucky to be in this position to be heading back to the Derby with one of the favorites?
I will talk about the experience of going back to the Derby now that you've already won it. You mentioned maybe some of that pressure is off, so to speak, and I'll use those words. But, you know, when the Masters champions go back to the Masters every year, they have a champions dinner and they show up in their green jackets and it's they're celebrated. And I think in some ways that trainers who have won the Kentucky Derby, jockeys who have won it, that they are celebrated and that there is a different feeling around those individuals. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I actually think along those lines, I think it would be very cool if Churchill could kind of make more of it. I mean, I suggested a while ago to someone, wouldn't it be cool if there was like a room where the Derby connections could go, you know, like a room was just set aside for the Derby connections. I think more could be made of it. And I think there'd be a lot of cool things that could be done with it because it is a very special fraternity. I mean, I feel really honored to be part of it. And it's very similar, I believe, to what you were saying about the Masters.
Yeah, it's such a small group of people that are involved in that, and they can relate to one another on a level that the rest of us mere mortals can just observe. You know, it's awesome. Great idea.
No, I'd love to see them make something of it. I think it would be, I think there's a lot of cool things that they could do with it. I love going to the museum. I mean, the museum sort of, you know, really brings it home when you get to see that, the movie, the Derby movie, and see some of the memorabilia. That's a very cool way to remember it. And sort of certainly when I go to the museum, I feel very much part of the club because they sort of welcome you like you're almost family.
Yeah, it would be neat if there was maybe a ring associated with it.
Absolutely.
Or
I think racing.
Jacket, but certainly a ring.
Yeah.
There is a ring, actually.
I don't know.
You guys didn't know that.
No.
Yeah, there is a ring. The trainer, the owner, and the jockey gets a ring.
Do you sport yours every once in a while?
You know, I don't. I just am not a big jewelry guy, and I had it fitted so my wife could wear it.
Oh.
I actually, when we were told about the ring, they asked me what size, and I said, I'd like you to make it for my wife so she could wear it. And they said, we don't do, you know, sort of women's. I said, one day a woman's going to win the Kentucky Derby. It's going to happen, right?
Good for you.
So anyway, she wears the ring. I believe Wayne, what does he have, 4 or 5? I think I've seen pictures of him with all of them on. And I've often seen him show people at Saratoga and stuff. But
yeah,
no, that's a very cool thing to have the ring.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, we were at the Charlestown Classic a few years ago, and Joe Torre won the race with Game On Dude. And after he was down in the winner's circle, and he was letting the kids put on his World Series ring. And I think it's such a big thing for fans of all different kinds of sports. And I've always felt like trainers should do that more and show it off to people and get people interested in the game that way.
Can you describe what the ring looks like, Graham?
You know, it's very similar to rings that I've seen, like for the football players. You know, it's a pretty bold ring. My wife's not afraid to show it off. You'll have to get it.
Will she be wearing it on Derby Day this year?
Yeah, she wears it most of the time. It's a big conversation piece.
That's great.
Yeah, she should, and she should be proud of that. It's an incredible accomplishment, and this year it would be even more incredible in some ways because Irish War Cry is a New Jersey bred, and it has been 25 years since a New Jersey bred has started in the Derby. The last to do it was Dance Floor, who finished third in 1992. So you're going to make some more history on that front, too.
Yeah, we could end up in the Jersey Hall of Fame or something.
It's a tough year for Jersey breds. It's going to be interesting to see who the horse of the year is. If you win the Derby, I think you got it sealed up.
Yeah, I think so. He was the two-year-old champ in Jersey, so.
Well, pretty special. Graham Motion, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. In the second half of the show, we're going to spend some time looking back at some of the other memorable moments that Graham has had in his career, and there have been so many that another half hour of the show might not be enough. But you think of names like, you know, Better Talk Now, and he mentioned Main Sequence. I mean, there have been so many. Animal Kingdom, certainly. And he talked about winning the Kentucky Derby. So many great names.
Yeah, just a fantastic stable, and always a great job, and always at the top of the list.
Graham, what was your first stakes win?
So I believe it was a horse called Gala Spinaway, who I still actually have now. He's turned out here at Fair Hill with Better Talk Now. He won a stake at Laurel when I first started training, and then he went on to win the Polynesian, which was a graded race at Pimlico. So those were my first. He was my first big horse. He was the horse that really put me on the map, and was also a horse that my old boss, Bernie Bond, had trained and that the owners had chosen to keep him with us. So I kind of feel like he was my foundation horse, if you like.
Did you think at that point that your career would even come close to ending up where it has?
Are you kidding me? It never even entered my head. I never could have imagined, where this has taken me. No way.
What was the horse that jump-started everything for you and really took you to another level?
Oh, I think probably Better Talk Now. I think when we won the Breeders' Cup, that really got a lot of attention internationally. A lot of Europeans started sending us horses. I think, the Breeders' Cup really puts you on the map. So he was, I always think of Gala Spinaway and Better Talk Now as kind of my real, the horses that made so much difference to my career. I was also fortunate enough to have a couple of really good pin oak horses early on in my career. One of them was Broken Vow, and the other one was a mare called Confessional, who went almost undefeated. And I believe that was around 2000. So those horses were also really important horses for me.
Well, we're going to spend time talking about each of those horses in the second half of the show. Stay with us. We're back with more. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Nominate your yearlings now to the Fasig Tipton Summer Selected Yearling Sales. These sales are the top three yearling sales in North America by rate of return. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky, July 10th and 11th. The Saratoga sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 7th and 8th. And the New York bred sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 12th and 13th. Selected sales, superior results. Nominate today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Shackleford, who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late on the John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside who goes to lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom. Macho Matchell Man in fourth with Shackleford, and then Master of Hounds, Santiva, Brilliant Speed, and then Pants on Fire, and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez, who took Derby 1:37.
Mark Johnson with the call. That was the 2011 Kentucky Derby and Animal Kingdom roaring to victory that afternoon beneath the Twin Spires. He, of course, trained by tonight's guest on Trainer Talk, and that is Graham Motion. Graham looking to get back to the winner's circle for a second time in this year's run for the Roses, and he can do it with Irish War Cry, the New Jersey bred, and you'll hear that race exclusively with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network in partnership with NBC Sports and with Westwood One. We bring you more than 20 hours of Derby Week coverage here on the network. You can head to horseracingradio.net to check out our complete Derby Week schedule, listing of affiliates, SiriusXM, channel information, and to listen worldwide. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, we are in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios visiting with trainer Graham Motion here. And if you missed any portion of the show, head over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast. Trust me, you will be happy that you did so. Graham, you hear that race call of Animal Kingdom winning the Derby. In the first half of the program, you talked about the feeling and what it was like when he crossed the finish line and even coming down to the wire. But there were several major stakes winners that came before Animal Kingdom in your career, and you talked about a couple of them before the break, and one name that you mentioned was Broken Vow. Tell me a little bit about Broken Vow and his story.
So Broken Vow and Confessional, they both came to me from Billy Mott. He had them, I believe, as two-year-olds and three-year-olds, and Pinot decided to send them to me, which was a big deal for me at the time because, you know, I was relatively new in the game. Broken Vow came, I don't believe he'd ever run when he came to me, and he had a bit of a reputation as being a bad boy. I think he was known as Broken Arm also as a two-year-old. I think he'd had several people off. And then Confessional, I believe, had won a graded race as a two-year-old and was pretty highly thought of. So, Broken Vow became kind of a marquee horse for us. He won the Islin at Monmouth, amongst other things, and was really a top horse and went on to be a really good stallion. And Confessional was undefeated, I believe, until the last time I ran her at Kentucky Downs, which was probably a rookie mistake. She'd always been sprinting, and I stretched her out to a mile at Kentucky Downs up and down the hills, and it was just too much for her. Ramon Dominguez rode both horses, and I think that kind of started our relationship, whatever you want to call it. It started it was the beginning of a time where he ended up riding a lot of horses for me up until the point where he became so popular that I couldn't get him anymore. But I was so lucky. Confessional was kind of a difficult horse. Ramon used to come and breeze her most of the time, and I always marveled at how he was able to get her to settle because she was kind of a rank speed horse, if you like, and Ramon just had this amazing rapport with her, and I think even if you talk to him now, I think these two horses would probably come up in his story.
Yeah, they were very fun to watch, especially Confessional. I just loved watching her run all the time. She was so good, and I was a big fan.
Yeah, she was really good. She was a fast mare. She was a really cool filly.
You know, there's another name that comes up when you look at Graham Motion's resume, and Graham, this is prior to Confessional and Broken Vow, but the horse that brought you to your first Kentucky Derby in 1998, and that was Chilito, who actually won the Flamingo Stakes. I can remember, I guess the Flamingo then was still at Hialeah, wasn't it?
That's right. So he won the Flamingo, and everybody's like, he's going to run in the Kentucky Derby. So I was like, of course, on we go. that was something else. You know, I probably was a little bit green behind the ears at that point. He started to become quite a bad actor himself, and I'll never forget everybody was talking about the walkover for the Derby and what a great experience it was. And I've got to say, it was about as bad an experience as anyone could have. Chilito was trying to mount everybody in sight. He was an orangutan going to the paddock. And it really was not an enjoyable experience.
Gives you a lot of confidence saddling one like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really did. And I remember Favorite Trick, I think, was the big star that year. And he happened to walk over to the paddock in front of us, and they had all the cameras on him, which was absolutely freaking out my horse.
Do you think that if you were in that position that you were in with Chilito, and you were in that position now, Graham, knowing what you know, would you have gone on to the Kentucky Derby?
You know, I probably would. I mean, he did run a really impressive race in the Flamingo. You know, it's hard for me to exactly remember the circumstances, but perhaps I would have done things a little differently. I remember I got into Churchill as quickly as I could because I thought that was really important. But perhaps that wasn't necessarily something I needed to do at the time.
What was it like to run a horse at Hialeah? I mean, it's so beautiful, even in its ramshackle condition now. What was it like when they were actually racing there?
Yeah, it was very neat. I mean, and to win that race was kind of one of their marquee races. I mean, still to this day, the trophy I have from the Flamingo is one of my favorite trophies. It's a really, it's not a real big trophy, but it's a very elegant trophy with a cup kind of set up on a pink stone with flamingos on it. It's a beautiful trophy. So I have really good memories of it. But, you know, don't forget also, even Gulfstream at that time kind of had a certain mystique about it. It was a really cool grandstand. You know, Gulfstream in itself had a lot of history to it and a great feel to it. Both the Florida tracks did.
Graham, let's play a little name association game. And I'm just going to mention the name of some of your top horses, and you can go ahead and tell us the story. And one of my favorites was a horse by the name of Filmmaker.
Yeah, she was so unlucky, Filmmaker. The fact that she came around at the same time as Ouija Board. I mean, I believe I ran her in the Breeders' Cup three times, and I think she finished second, if not third, to Ouija Board on two or three of those occasions. Again, probably one of my, you know, that was the year when Better Talk Now won the Breeders' Cup, was the first year I ran her. You know, and I remember coming back afterwards when Johnny was second on her, and I looked so disappointed, and he was like, why are you disappointed? We ran so well. And it was just coming that close to winning the Breeders' Cup. Who would have known that later on that day we would have won with Better Talk Now?
Was she a easier type of filly or mare to be around than some of the other names that you've already talked about?
Yeah, she was an absolute pleasure. I mean, she was just a charm to be around. You know, I've been fortunate enough to train some really good grass mares, and on the whole, they've been tended to be really straightforward. You know, her shared account, obviously Miss Temple City, just real professionals, no quirkiness about them, just wanted to get on about their business and just please you, I guess.
Shared account is the only horse that made me cry on the radio. That was an unbelievable day. Talk about that for a second.
Yeah, again, I mean, I didn't feel a great deal of pressure, although I felt that we were very live. I think we were 40-1 that day. She'd actually gotten loose the day before, believe it or not, which really was a heart stopper. We'd been standing waiting to get on the grass course to gallop at Churchill, and some kids were running up and down the bleachers there by the 5/8 pole where they have the bleachers set up for the, I think probably for Derby week as much as anything. And she was a very quiet by nature filly, but she absolutely became unglued and reared up and lost her rider. And I think Bill Mott actually caught her on his pony for me. So that was an interesting experience. I still have the picture to this day of her rearing up the day before and dropping her rider. But she was a very, you know, honest filly. She was coming off a disappointing race, I think, in the Flower Bowl, which is probably why she was 40-1. But I'd always thought she was very legitimate. And I, you know, could I have predicted her winning the Breeders' Cup? Probably not. But I'd always had a lot of high hopes for her.
Graham, how about Bulls Bay? That's a horse that sometimes I think gets overlooked, but people will forget that he won the Whitney Grade 1 in 2009.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those races that, you know, you just feel lucky to be a part of, let alone winning. I mean, when you set up training, you don't expect to win a race like the Whitney. So that was a pretty cool deal. He beat the horse that had won it at least twice previously, I believe. Nick Zito's horse, the Gelding, that belonged to Tracy Farmer. His name escapes me. But no, he was a really good horse and probably is an underrated stallion, actually.
Graham Motion, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Yeah, he's had quite a few winners and kind of some hard knocking horses along the way. I agree with you. I don't think he gets the respect that he probably should.
No, I mean, for a local sort of, you know, a local Maryland stallion, I think he has the potential to throw some really useful stock.
Graham, back to Better Talk now for a minute, because you mentioned in the first half of the show that he was the horse that really catapulted you to a new level with your career. What's his story? Take us back through the story of Better Talk Now.
So the owners of Better Talk Now, Brent Johnson being the main partner, he is a big handicapper, and he had spotted this horse running at Churchill. I believe he was still a maiden, and Mrs. Perkins owned him and trained him. And he had approached her about possibly buying him, and she really wasn't interested in selling him. And I think, you know, perhaps he came back and ran again, and Brent just kept trying and trying, and eventually Mrs. Perkins gave in to him and sold him. He was kind of a naughty horse when he came to us. He was a colt. I believe he came to me as a three-year-old, and we had him gelded at the end of the year. And he'd run well as a three-year-old, but perhaps hadn't shown the potential in the afternoon that we thought he could show. I think after we gelded him, he really turned around. He was a real cool horse because he just had a very different look to most horses. He's built really like a cross-country runner, very lean and athletic. And he had this extraordinary way of going. And I think, you know, not only did he have a huge heart, but he had this tremendous stride that I just so clearly remember his action. It's so different from any other horse. And he also had this tendency to get out in his races, which was costing him. He was getting beaten necks and noses, and Ramon would say, you know, if only I could ride him, he wouldn't be getting beaten in these races. So eventually we ended up putting on a blinker on him that was pretty much almost covered his outside eye. And that was what fixed him and kept him straight. And winning the Breeders' Cup that year was incredible, I think, for Ramon and for I. I mean, we, you know, neither one of us had ever competed even in the Breeders' Cup before that point, I believe.
How much of what a trainer does, Graham, is just trial and error?
Oh, I think a lot. You know, I think we're guessing a lot. You know, like I said, been saying to people this week that perhaps don't know much about racing or understand, it's, you know, we're not unlike coaches, except the horses can't tell us what they're feeling, what they're thinking. So, you know, we basically have to figure it out for ourselves. So, of course, trial and error is going to come into that.
Yeah, I've always thought people are better trainers who have kids, because if you have a baby, it's like having a horse. They can't tell you what's wrong. You got to figure it out. So you get a little bit of an affinity for that when you have a kid. It training becomes easier, I think. Did you find that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if they could come back and tell us every day how they feel after the exercise or how they feel going into a race, it would, you know, I think everybody could do it. The hard part is trying to figure that out on your own and trying, to use a corny expression, trying to get inside their heads, I guess, is what we obviously spend a lot of time doing.
Graham, I know that you become very attached to a lot of the horses that you have in your care, and most trainers do. They just can't help it because this game at the very core is about the horse.
Which is always something you're told you should not do when you set off training.
Really? But you can't help it, can you?
I don't think so. I mean, not if you're a horse person. Look, most of us get into this game because we love the animals. That's certainly, you know, I was brought up around horses. I love being around horses. That's ultimately what I enjoy. You know, all the other stuff is work. But being around the horses is what I think most of us get into the game for in the first place.
All right. So when you have a horse like Better Talk Now or Animal Kingdom or any of the horses you've had that have meant so much to your career, and the day comes where they retire and you have to say goodbye, what's that day like for a trainer?
You know, that's not tough for me, because to see them walk out of here in one piece and healthy and doing well, I think that's very satisfying, actually, especially if they've had a good career. I don't have a problem with that at all. I really don't.
Yeah, it's almost like you've reached the top of the mountain when you can send a horse home. I mean, you know all the pitfalls of racing and the things that can go wrong, and when you put one on the van to send them home to breed or whatever to Stallion career. That's a happy day, I think, more than anything else.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've never been asked that question before, but when I think about it, you know, I just get a certain amount of satisfaction out of seeing a horse walk out of the barn after having a good career and just feeling good about what you've been able to do with that horse.
How often will you try to go visit, let's say, the horses that leave your care, like, say, Animal Kingdom, who is now a stallion? How often will you try to go visit them when you come to Kentucky or wherever they may be?
Yeah, I mean, Animal Kingdom in particular is a horse that we try to visit, you know, every year at least once or twice. But it's also really easy because he's very close to Keeneland when he's in this country. So, you know, he's a horse we get to see a lot. I actually rode Ichabod Crane the other day, believe it or not.
Wow.
No.
Philip Dutton's daughter has been competing on him. So that was pretty cool. Chappie was out there taking pictures of me. So, you know, I do to a certain degree, although obviously it's quite hard. Some of the mares I get to see on occasion, but probably not as much as you'd like to, or perhaps you'd think one might be able to keep in touch with them. It's not that easy.
Talk a little bit more about Ichabod Crane. I think he's a cool story.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he was kind of a barn favorite when he was here just because he was a very kind horse to be around. He was a very generous horse. You know, we got him to the Preakness. He finished third in the Preakness, and he went on to be kind of a favorite, I think, New York bred older horse. He was always knocking on the door. I would think, actually, Rajiv might have ridden him. It might have been one of the earlier horses that he rode for me. So he was, you know, because of his personality, he had this really kind nature. He was a horse that the exercise riders would always fight to get on every day because he was such a good ride. We just had this really good rapport with him. And then, you know, when he retired, my wife was just starting to get involved with trying to find homes for these retired horses. And we were trying to get something going with Philip and Evie Dutton. Philip's the Olympic three-day event rider, who lives about half an hour from us. And we just thought this was the perfect horse to start it with. And he went on and won the first makeover for Philip. And that was kind of what started the whole makeover, which is the Thoroughbred makeover, which has become so popular. So I like to think he's kind of the poster child for the Thoroughbred makeover.
Did you have a inkling that he would be good at the new sport?
Yeah, we did. I mean, Philip is pretty quick to say if they're not going to handle it. He's not afraid to tell you. So, you know, I think we'd sent several horses to him perhaps before, which he hadn't felt were up to it. But we felt pretty confident when we sent Ichabod to him that he was going to like him and that he was up to the challenge.
By the way, coming back to what we said a few moments ago, we were talking about Bulls Bay, and we were trying to remember the name of the horse that he beat, Nick Zito's horse. That was Commentator. Oh, who was in there. Remember, he was so good. Yep. And Bulls Bay.
I thought you guys would be all over that.
You know, I had the C in my head.
That's what I had, too.
It began with a C, right. But beyond that, I was at a loss.
Couldn't come up with it. All I could think of was Tracy Farmer.
Graham Motion with us.
Well, I particularly say that because I remember winning the race, and, of course, walking down the winner's circle, the first person I saw was Tracy, and there'd been a lot of talk about Commentator coming back to win it. Was it the third time in a row he could have won it? I think he'd won it twice before, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Maybe I'm making that up. But I had a certain amount of guilt for beating this cool horse Commentator with a long shot, Bulls Bay. But, you know, that was a pretty cool day. And Jeremy rode Bulls Bay. That was a big deal for him, Jeremy Rose. You know, winning those races like the Whitney, you know, those races are very special. Those go down on your plaque when you hang it up.
You know, because you're a fan of the sport, you had a certain amount of guilt when you beat Commentator. But let's be honest, Graham, how long does it take a trainer to get past that guilt when they win a grade one?
Yeah, you get over it pretty quickly, about 2 seconds.
Graham Motion here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Graham, tell me about Ring Weekend, who is owned by our good friend Terry Finley at West Point Thoroughbred. This is another cool horse that's been really good to you.
Yeah, actually, Ring Weekend would have run in the Derby had he not gotten sick the week before the race or the 2 weeks out. He won the Tampa Derby very impressively, which has kind of got us onto the Derby path. Anyway, once we found out that he was a superior grass horse, he really turned things around up to when he won the Group 1 in California 2 years ago. And it wasn't long after that that he came up with a really nasty foot abscess, the likes of which I've never seen anything like it. He had an abscess, and we thought we had it under control, and it just kept coming back and coming back, and we could never get to the bottom of it. And in the end, we had to send him to New Bolton, where Dean Richardson had to kind of go in there and clean the hoof out. And he ended up missing most of a year. I got a lot of admiration for this horse because he really suffered. I think foot abscesses can be so painful for horses, and this horse really dealt with it for a long time. But he came back really well last year. He was just beaten in the Dixie. Has had a good year since. Won up at Saratoga, and I'm kind of freshening him up now, hoping to point him for the Dixie this year again.
Yeah, he's a cool horse, and he's a fan favorite. I mean, he's got a legion of followers, not just West Point people either.
Yeah, no, I think these geldings that stick around on the grass, kind of get a name for themselves, and I think they're fun to watch, and they get a good following.
We'll have to check and see if that Dixie is going to be run on Ring Weekend again this year. You remember last year, Terry telling us that it was actually being contested on Ring Weekend when the cadets at West Point were going to get their rings, so... that would be kind of neat. It would be great to pull off the victory on that particular weekend.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Graham, how about the ride that Miss Temple City took you on? I think Jude would punch me in the face if I didn't ask you about this horse.
Yeah, I mean, I've trained some pretty special mares, but without a doubt, she's the best one I've trained. I think what she accomplished last year, beating the boys twice in group ones, I think it went a little bit unnoticed. And part of the reason was there were two other really good mares around, Lady Eli and Teppin, who kind of stole her thunder. But I think any other year, what Miss Temple City accomplished last year would have been an absolute standout. So I think, I feel a little bit, I don't know what the word is. You feel like she perhaps has lived in their shadows a little bit. What Lady Eli has accomplished coming back from that injury is incredible. And what Teppin did, nobody admires more what she did at Royal Ascot than I did because I know how hard it is to do that. So I feel really glad that, these guys have chosen to keep her in training this year. I think it would have been very easy not to. I'm hoping to run her on Derby Day. We had a little bit of a setback down in Florida where she got loose one day. She was about as far away from the stable as she could have been at Palmetto's and ran all the way back. And just tweaked herself. It was nothing terrible, but enough that we had to miss Keeneland. But she breezed 7 furlongs yesterday. We hope to run her on Derby Day, and if things go well, we hope to get back to Ascot. I nominated her yesterday to the Queen Anne. So I'm really excited about the chance to go back with her. She's very special.
When I heard Teppin was retired, you were the first person I thought of. And I wondered what you thought about that. Oh, we got her out of the way, or that's too bad.
A little bit of both. I mean, I give Teppin a lot of credit because if it wasn't for her, I think we wouldn't have taken on the boys last year in the group ones. I think she was the reason for that. So I have to thank her for that. I love the fact that Teppin won that race in England. I mean, I think that was, it just goes to show it could be done. I think she really waved the flag for American horses, who I think get a bad rap over there. And the fact that she was able to go over there and win one of the most prestigious races at Ascot, I think, was incredible. And I am glad we don't have to run against her, but I probably am one of her biggest fans also. So.
Well, Graham, only a couple minutes left before we have to wrap up this edition of Trainer Talk, but it has been a delight to walk down memory lane with you here tonight, and looking forward to what's going to happen on the first Saturday in May with Irish War Cry. So we want to wish you all the best there, too. Before we let you go, how about on the human side of things? Is there a story that you have of a person that you met that, for whatever reason, whether they're a celebrity or they're just involved in the game in some way, and they made an impact on you and your career that you're never going to forget?
Well, look, I've been fortunate enough to meet some pretty amazing people in my career. I think meeting Sheikh Mohammed in Dubai was one of the most special things that I'll remember. But on the personal side, I think the guys that I have working for me, Adrian Rolls, my assistant, he's been with me since we started. It was my wife and I and Adrian, and that's how we got started at Laurel way back when. And Adrian's been with me ever since. So, you know, I feel extremely fortunate to have had him along for the ride with me, and he's a big part of the operation. Dave Rock was with me for a long time. He left last year and moved out to Colorado, but he also was with me almost since day one. So we're looking at over 20 years. And now I have Alice Clapham, who you guys are familiar with, who kind of travels with all my horses. So, you know, I think when you have people like that behind you who are not only really good employees but really good friends, that makes what we do a lot easier, that's for sure.
Well, Graham, it's been quite a ride, and we want to, first of all, thank you for being with us. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those out to you. And as always, can't thank you enough for your time, and want to wish you all the best moving forward, and of course on that first Saturday in May.
Thanks, guys. It's been fun, but I'm exhausted remembering all these horses.
Poor Graham.
Well, you got a week to recover.
Yeah. Don't bounce Derby week now, my friend.
No, I'm going to save it up. It's been great to talk about them. Really fun. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Graham. Graham Motion with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Not only one of the nicest people you're ever going to meet, but one of the true good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing, no doubt.
Yeah, he's a class act, and we love him.
He's one of the names that when people ask you, hey, I have a horse, I'm looking for a trainer, who do you recommend? He's one of the first names off your tongue every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really is.
You've witnessed that.
Yeah. Well, mine too. All right, if you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and remember to join us for the 143 Run for the Roses. Make sure you visit horseracingradio.net for more information and for a podcast of this show. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.